Welcome back to another Block Studios.
Yes, we're back.
Interviewing a Frenchman today.
Yes, very exciting. Potentially first one ever.
Potentially.
So Isaac, I've heard we have a new drop coming out with another block, and it's with Layback Luke and Rehab, and so I'm pretty keen for it.
Anotherblock.io on the 19th of August, Rehab and Layback Luke. Here we go.
Thank you so much for coming on. I know we've talked about this for a while. Actually, you were one of the first people when we started this podcast,
really?
Probably a few months ago now. You're one of the first people on our list because I love some of the stuff you're doing, and you've planted yourself there in Europe, and you know, you've made a great community there. And so pumped to finally have you on. So thank you so much for doing
thank
this.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm really happy to be there.
The first thing I noticed in looking through, we pride ourselves in doing a bit of research here. And so the first thing I noticed is you're a very busy man because you do a lot of things. And so it's pretty wild. And so I was going to maybe step through some of those. The first thing I thought was kind of interesting, the podcast that you do as well, right? So you have a podcast called NFT Morning, and it's every weekday morning, just before 9 o'clock, I think you start. And tell me if I'm wrong here. Is it sometimes on Clubhouse and sometimes on Twitter Spaces?
You know, how you know all of this? You know, I'm really impressed, you know, by your information. Yeah, exactly. You know, we do it like sometimes on, actually, you know, we use these apps like Clubhouse and Twitter Space as a studio, like you are using currently Riverside, for example. Just, you know, we use it, but with a small audience. You know, we have like 50-ish people there, you know, because you have to be there in the morning. But then, you know, we record it then to podcast it on audio podcast platforms like Spotify, Apple, and everything like this. But so, yeah, but we do the recording every morning as a live podcast, I would say.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And another one of the really cool projects that I saw you you work on is Non-Fungible Conference. Andreas from Another Block went, it would have been this year. Next year's one is in April in Lisbon in Portugal. One of the cool things that I've kind of found out about Portugal in the last year is they actually have really low capital gains tax. They also had a Solana conference there, which one of the bigger investors, I think David Sachs went to the Solana conference in Lisbon, Portugal. So is it actually because there's a larger community in Lisbon because of that lower capital gains, or do you think it's just a really cool place to hang out?
I believe it's a mix of a lot of things, actually, you know. But it's true that right now Portugal, you know, we cannot deny the tax aspect is playing a role. But I believe that, you know, if you would have the same tax environment, but in north of a small city or somewhere in North Europa, I believe it will not be the same. You know, I believe that you have, on one hand, the environment, and not only the tax, not only for crypto, but also, you know, for the startup world, it's becoming a lot of new startup, and in the hope of Web 2.0, also startup decided to have their European headquarters in Lisbon now, like Google and
companies
like this, you know, used to be in other countries, and now they have decided, maybe for tax reason also, but, you know, to move here. And so, you know, you have this big conference, Web 2 conference called the Web Summit that moved here. So, yeah, the startup ecosystem start to boom. In the same time, you know, as it was quite cheap and affordable, it happened something like in Berlin, I would say, like 15 years ago, where a lot of artists, you know, start immigrating also in the same place because, you know, like a flat are quite affordable, and, you know, you can live, you know, you have like this community of people, you know, living with art and party and happy with that. And so a lot of people, you know, moved from Berlin also just to, live with the art and party and go to Lisbon. And at the end of the day, the weather, the good food, the prices, you know, it's quite affordable compared with everywhere else in Europe. Make it like becoming a new, fresh European capital. So I think, you know, all of this, and this is why I decided also, even if I spend most of my time in Paris, actually, but I decided to do it in Lisbon because, you know, for me, it's a bet on the next 10 years, basically.
Yeah, wow, that's so cool. Okay, so starting a conference is a big deal. And I think we're talking pretty decent sized conference here. From what I could tell, we're talking maybe 1,500 guests. And I think maybe you're expecting even more than that this year, which is amazing. Could you talk us through a little bit of like where the idea came from? Had you seen it outworked in Web 2 and you're like, I can do like a Web 3 version of this? And what are some of the logistics like for people who haven't put on an event before, which is going to be 99% of the people watching this? How hard is it? Like, give us a sense of the logistics involved.
It's quite huge. But, you know, to be fair, my background is event organization. So, you know, I founded a company like 10 years ago called Hack, you know, Be My App, and then also on the brand hackathon.com. And so basically, you know, we've been pioneering the hackathon format and selling tech events to corporate, to make it simple. So I've been producing, you know, the company the last 10 years, something like 1,000 events. So I have a strong event background. And so, yeah, when I think it was like the idea came actually, you know, when I was going to some conferences. And I, you know, I love events. I really love, you know, real life, you know, because, you know, we it's great, you know, to meet here, but, you know, I'm pretty sure that Nathan and Isaac, you know, when I will meet you in Australia or in Europe, you know,
it'll be great.
You know, it would be great to have a beer together and chat and be happy with that. And so it's perfect. And, so I love that. And so I decided, you know, when I was going to some events, I didn't feel like, you know, the NFT vibe. NFT vibe is a bit different, you know, from the DeFi community. You know, for me, it's not exactly the same. And it's not exactly the same culture, the same language, way of living. So, you know, I've been going to a lot of crypto events. It's cool. It's great. And they talk about NFTs and you have some nice NFT speakers. But it's not the same community. Most of the people I'm talking from in the DeFi world, I say I'm an NFT maximalist because this is what I am at the end of the day. They say, oh, yeah, NFT, yeah, I like the technology, it's nice, but I'm not really into that. Or it's booming, yeah, but, you know, they don't know really much about that. And so I said, I want to do something dedicated to this new community, you know, community mixing art lover and degens. I think this is, you know, the
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Basically. And so, yeah, so I started working on this because as I had this, you know, background and on the one hand, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, yeah, for me, it was missing. I said, okay, let's do this event. And to be fair, at the beginning, I didn't want to do something big, you know, say, okay, let's start slow. You know, we can do a nice event for, 1,000 people, something like this. And, you know, damn, this world is so crazy. You know, we end up with 2,500 people and, you know, the place, you know, we booked a bigger place and we booked, you know, we had to create some tents around the venue to...
Oh, so you had to change it because of the engagement, like it was blowing up.
Now, to be fair, you know, we had the two options.
Wow. Yeah, that's so cool, though.
At the end of the day, we end
that's
up...
That's amazing. With...
But, you know, yeah, you know, the second option when I visited this Palacio at the beginning was so big for me. I told my, you know, the girl I'm working with, Dorothy, I told her, are you crazy? You know, it's huge. We'll never do something in this kind of place. And this is where we end up at the end of the day. Because, you know, when, you know, you don't know how it works exactly. But at the moment, you know, the community start to like it. And you see people tweeting and you see, you know, people that you are fan, you know, yeah, starting to say, oh, I will go to Lisbon for this event. And then, you know, it's becoming like something. Yeah, it's becoming something. And so then, you know, you have the beginning of the community coming there. So, yeah, it's something. Then, you know, in terms of organization, it's, I think, you know, it's a mix of creativity. This is what we have in this team. You know, I've been working with great creative directors that have been hiring for the event and a great also people coming from the fashion industry and trying to find a good mix, you know, to have the good creativity on one hand. You need the good also good people, you know, to work with, basically, you know, because it's huge, you know, when we build, you know, for example, an event like this, we used 3 days to set up everything. You know, creating the walls, creating the rooms, building, you know, the tents, you know, all the booths, of course, the cartoons, creating rooms. You know, it's just crazy, you know. And so on one hand, you need to think well and have the good 3D and have the good people to think. On the other hand, you need the good people to make it happen. And at this moment, there is one thing that is important is, you know, work with people you trust. And, you know, it's complicated because it was the first time I was working on events in Portugal, so I didn't have the network. So, you know, at the beginning, I made some mistake to find the good partners. You know, we'd make some, when you start to work with some people and they are not responsive and they say, don't worry. You know, it's always, you know, it's complicated. And we had the chance, you know, to find some good partners to work with at every step. So, you know, furniture, you know, it's small, a lot of details, you know, furniture, setup, sound, AV, internet. And so you need to find, you know, the good balance, you know, to make it work. And so all this stuff called the production, then, you know, at the end of the day, then, you know, you're just here to give the great idea and be sure that they can be done. And don't be too crazy, even if I like to be, but, you know, at the moment, you know, you need to respect, you know, to have the idea that you would like to do and then to reduce expectation to say, okay, let's keep it for next year to make things well. And maybe next time, you know, we'll do it a bit more crazy because you cannot do everything.
That's a good teaser for next year.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
You don't want to release you don't want to release the best of the best yet.
There's
there's more. You're leaving iterations for everyone to come.
I like it.
That's great.
I think that this is when you are like entrepreneur. You always, you know, when you leave the event, you already think about how you will do it next, you know, and how you will improve and what you can do. And it's great because, you know, everybody tell you it's great. And, you know, the vibes is, you know, everybody loves it. I have such good feedback from people and community, and people say, yeah, that they like how it was organized and, you know, all the details, because it's really important, all the details we've been working on. But then, you know, you say, okay, it's nice. But what you see is, here it was wrong. We need to improve that. We need to improve that. And also, you know, you want to make it a bit stronger, I would say, to make it simple. So this is why next year, you know, we are working on a 10,000 people event, you know, to make it a bit bigger.
Yeah, cool. That'd be a very big scale. That'd be great.
That's crazy.
So in those events, it's looked like there was a lot of really cool displays and a lot of lighting setups, you know, the smoke machines, everything like that. I've seen a lot of the pictures from those. And that's a lot of displaying those kind of digital world assets in the physical world. One thing that I went and had a look at was one of your most popular episodes, which was about displaying NFTs in the physical world. And so there were a few options mentioned, like, for example, you could display your NFTs on Apple TV and Android TV with apps like Nifty Gateway and Async Art, as well as there were options for frames, like there was a Samsung frame option and Infinite Objects, which is another really cool product, which is like kind of making specific NFT partnerships and making frames like that. And then, of course, those are all simply some physical products that people can get a hold of, but there's options like metaverse options like Decentraland, for example. So do you think owning digital assets should be kind of something to be really happy to display in the physical world? Or do you think that, for example, should it be more of a gradual move to the metaverse? Like,
for me, you know, to be honest, I believe that digital asset will stay digital first. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, that, okay, whatever, you know, in the virtual world and in the physical world, we are just at the beginning. We are not ready. We don't have the solution so far. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, in few months or few years, every virtual conference I will do on Zoom or whatever, you know, instead of getting this Hawaiian beach provided by Microsoft, you know, I will have my own background that I own basically, and that I'm proud, you know, to work with. We don't realize it start to happen with social media and with this profile picture stuff. But you know, it will start with profile picture, then with banner. Then, you know, I believe we will be able to skin a bit more, you know, everything we are interacting with in our digital. It don't, you know, maybe it could be a 3D immersive metaverse, you know, as we see it. But even at a slower level, you know, everywhere we are interacting with the current existing metaverse, you know, that is already there, you know, the web and the social media, I believe, you know, that NFTs, you know, will be happy to display them, and we will find a lot of new way to start to display them. So I believe, you know, it's digital first. Then it does not mean that it, you know, it's not bad, you know, to display it in physical things. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, for example, at home, I have a Samsung frame, and I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty happy, you know, to display my art blocks on this, and, you know, to let people visit this and say, oh, you know, your art blocks is pretty cool. The same, you know, I have some friends, you know, using the Apple Watch or something like this. I don't like watches, but, you know, I think it's pretty cool, you know, to display that, you know, like jewels. You can have some jewels, you can have a few things, but it's only one or two NFT, you know, that you will display this way. In the metaverse or in digital, you know, you have a whole collection that you can have in different use cases. And for me, this is where it's happening. Of course, then as an event organizer, you need to find ways to magnify NFTs. And, you know, if you have a nice collection with like a lot of screens showing NFTs, you know, you can, you know, it's all about let people feel an emotion. And so you can try to find ways, as you say, you know, you can use screens, you can use app, you can use even, you know, beamers. And there are different ways to do it, or even hologram solution. Now there are more and more things. You know, the whole thing is about the scenography and how you try, you know, to let people feel an emotion.
Yeah. That's cool. I might tie that into the next thing that I was hoping to talk about, which, so you're talking about metaverse there, and you're talking about Decentraland and stuff. So another metaverse project is Sandbox, right? And Sandbox is originally from, is it Paris, or it's at least from France? Another project is like Ledger, which is a wallet, one of the bigger wallets, to be honest, is also from France. And so I noticed that you're involved with a project called NFT Factory. Right. And so both of these projects are involved. It's like about 51, you know, leaders within this industry who are involved with the project. And so it looks like it's supposed to open officially in September this year. Could you tell our audience a bit about what that is and what they could expect if they were to go and see it?
Yeah, actually, you know, I think it's really interesting. All this started with a conversation I had with Jean-Michel Payon. He's a, you know, the basically right now the chief of staff at Ledger.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, he discovered Bitcoins and cryptocurrencies, like, I think it was like 7 years ago, thanks to a building in the street called the Bitcoin House. La Maison du Bitcoin, cool. En français. And it was just a place where you can walk in and buy a Bitcoin and come back, you know, with your wallet and your first Bitcoin, basically. And, you know, it was really something really strong to let people understand and discover that. At the end of the story, this Bitcoin house, you know, they evaluate and it became Ledger, you know, because they had to find ways, you know, to let people have a physical way to live, because they say, you know, if we want people to understand that they have something, we need to find something. And so, you know, they created Ledger. And so at the end of the day, you know, it became Ledger.
Wow.
And I used some shortcuts, it's a bit longer, but this is the story.
That's cool.
Basically. And so, you know, he told me, okay, we should do the same with NFTs, you know, find a place in the street with, you know, visible windows. Anyone in the street can walk in and say, oh, what is it? You know, come inside. And basically leave the shop with their first NFT. This is the main mission. You know, I think it's really basically let people discover NFTs and get their first one. So we are working right now, you know, with the architect and everything, you know, to make it work. But, you know, basically the main idea is, you know, really it looks like a gallery on the first floor. You know, you can watch and then, you know, you can have some trainings and get your first NFT. This is the main thing. Second thing is, of course, a hub, you know, because really strong community. And it's true that right now in France and in Europe, we have some cool, really important companies, you know, as you mentioned, Ledger, the Sandbox. We have one called Sorar that is really like for, you know, football card, and that is becoming quite important also. And also in, yeah, and a lot of topic, you know, we have this kind of companies, and we say, you know, we need to have now, on one hand, we have key leaders. On the other hand, when you look, you know, the media and the papers, and when you see politics talking about it, you know, it's just a scam, and it's something, you know, that will not last. And, you know, we don't want to do some kind of lobbying or anything. We just want people to understand what it is. And, you know, the bet is if, you know, most of the people in Europe have their own wallet, then you don't need any question anymore. You don't need to think about politics. You don't need to think, you know, everybody owns NFTs. This is the end of the story. This is the project. And as the project is really ambitious, you know, we started, you know, basically with a, yeah, we started with a group of seven people. It was Sébastien Borget from the Sandbox. It was the guy who founded the Museum of Crypto Art, the first museum in crypto voxel, called Mocha Benoît Couty. It was, yeah, so the guy from Ledger, Jean-Michel Payon. It was, so, you know, different key people. And then, you know, as we started and all of us are connected with other entrepreneurs, okay, it became 51, and now actually it's 128 co-founders.
Oh, wow.
So we are like 128 co-founders. Oh, wow. And so of this entity. Mm. And so we have, and then, you know, what we create also is a token that is a membership token for 1,000 people. And basically it gives them special access to everything happening in the place. For example, the, you know, the second floor is dedicated to members. So it's a place when you can get a coffee and do your business meeting. And if you own the token, you know, can have access to the place. All the events we will organize, like meetups, you know, every day or stuff, you can pre-register if you are a member. So, you know how it is, sometimes meetups are quickly sold out or for some reason. So it's a way to get it. And so it's a way, you know, to have priority, basically. And so to create a kind of membership club, yeah, based on token.
Wow.
That's, and, yeah, that's really good.
Oh yeah, no, it's pretty ambitious project. And actually, you know, I believe, you know, yeah, we are experimenting that, opening end of September. And at the end of the day, it, if it works well, you know, we'll be happy then to open different factories.
Oh, yeah.
In different cities. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's almost like you're taking your live event model and applying it to an all the time event. Like, it's like, oh yeah, you can come all the time. This is a business that's always going. It's not a one time specific thing. So it's really cool.
A bit less stressful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think you would get a lot more network as well out of that, because you're getting all of these co-founders that you're actually working with. So you're getting a stronger network, you know, with all of those people. One of the topics that really caught my eye when I was looking through some of your content was about NFT inheritance law. So this one's a bit of a pivot, but this was really cool. So I know with stocks in Australia, for example, an individual buys stocks and they get this holder identification number, and then it's matched up with this big central database called CHESS, basically. And that's something that I'm interested in the land of decentralized products is what happens to your NFTs when you die. So I know that was something that you discussed.
I've never thought about it, but now I'm wondering.
I realized I've never thought about it before. And so I was like, oh yeah, what's the decentralized equivalent of being able to take what you have and give it to your next of kin, you know?
I think, you know, it's really, I don't know how you know that. I think, you know, when I talked about it, it was in French, if I'm not wrong.
Oui, monsieur.
I think it's cool. This is what we do every morning, you know, in this podcast, you know, thinking, you know, we have some sessions like this. And so, yeah, we've been thinking about, you know, because it came also with the die of, you know, an artist, pretty strong French artist, actually called Alot Amoni, who's an OG and a really referent. Who passed, I think it was like 5 months ago. And so then, you know, it opened a lot of thinking about, you know, then, you know, the transmission to his family and how things are going. And so at the end of the day, you have like tech solution that exists. This is the people who thought this, you have this a protocol or blockchain, whatever, I don't know what it is exactly. It's a protocol called Ternoa. And what they do, they create like time capsule. So basically it's kind of a wallet that, you know, can be opened only under specific conditions, for example. And so you define this and you can say it will happen only if my notary, you know, give this passcode to my legal, to my legacy. I don't know. Or it can happen only in 20 years if the person have this information, or only, you know, you can define some things, some stuff like that. So they define some time capsule. And they've been working, you know, they are experimenting this with some lawyers, basically, you know, to have a solution when you can go to your lawyer and basically, you know, write your the same way, you know, that you would do it on paper. And so then, you know, the lawyer, the notary in French, this is what it is, can execute it. And say to your child basically that, you know, according to this, you know, this is the way to unlock the wallet, and so they can do it this way, for example.
That's really good insight. That's cool.
I mean, you know, yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting because, of course, you know, I'm pretty sure maybe, you know, that it will happen that some people will die, and they will be the only one to know their seed phrase.
Yes, correct.
And so it's you know, it could be potentially terrible. So you know, there are different ways. What I learned basically, it's normally you will have to declare, because you could have soft ways. You know, you say, for example, you know, my seed phrase in the safe in the bank, and so, you know, basically, you know, when you die, everything that is inside of the safe will go, you know, to your child. It could be the one way to do it, but it's not the legal way, but it could work also. So, but yeah, I think it's interesting to think about it. And when we've been doing this room, we've been thinking a bit more also, and thinking then it's a bit interesting. You could have a kind of, in your legacy, you know, this is what they do, these people in Ternoa. You can give also an environment, like your song, your pictures, and even, you know, your wordings. So in the future, you know, thanks to some AI stuff, you know, people could recreate a new version of yourself, thanks to, you know, what you led to them, you know, you know, just an AI, you know, they could chat with their grandfather or something like this. And I think, you know, but okay, then, you know, it's really like a science fiction. But it's too far.
Oh man, that's a really interesting point, isn't it? Oh man, that's a rabbit warren as well, because like, it's a little off topic, but I remember downloading this app once. I can't remember what it was called, but it basically generated an AI friend for you. And so you could message the friend, and as you would have conversation, it would learn what you wanted to talk about, and it would start like responding in that way. And so to be able to then put some attributes of an actual person in that, and then, you know, take it into a metaverse situation where there's some sort of physical representation of that person, you can interact with them. That's crazy. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, some interest. Yeah, no.
That's cool. This, you know, we couldn't finish without talking about NFT Revolution, which is a book which I believe you wrote, came out last year. And looks like you can tell us what the audience sort of was hoped, what kind of audience you were kind of writing this for. But it looked like it was maybe for anyone, because it was like four sections, which talked about the history, talked about notable platforms, notable people, and then what knowledge someone needs to sort of interact in the space, which is Web3 and stuff like that. Did you want to talk a little bit about what the book was about and just give us a bit of an insight into that?
I think you got the point. The idea was to let my father be able to understand NFTs. So it was really like, at the very, very beginning, it was just about explaining. So first step, explaining the crypto movement, you know, because it's political, it's you know, cultural, societal, and economical, of course. But you know, understanding, you know, that it's not just, you know, understanding from where it come, what is the idea, and why, you know, it's programmed to become bigger and bigger and bigger. This is my you know, I think, you know, all the people in the space, you know, from what you see, you know, basically from what we see, you know, the idea was to compare a bit cryptocurrencies, and especially Bitcoin at the beginning, but then, you know, all the cryptocurrencies movement as a religions. Oh, yeah. And, you know, as religions, you know, as even, you know, Christianism, maybe. It started with small people, a bit crazy, and then it became a main movement. And then, you know, at the very, very beginning, it was true small believer. And then, you know, it became a reality. Because like everything, you know, the more you believe in something, the more it become a reality. And so this is the point, you know, with everything that human is able to create. You know, you create your own myth. And so, you know, the new myth that we are creating now, it's something that stick with the century we are discovering with digital, with the democracy crisis, with the institution crisis. So all of this, you know, make a new story that we want to believe in, basically. And so this is what we explain. And so basically we try to explain that we believe that it's just the beginning, and all this, you know, religion will become more important. And then, you know, this is basically what we explain. And so then historically how it came and how history came into the place and what is an NFT, of course. And but, you know, try to make it really simple and understandable for anyone. And then, you know, we talk about history, what, you know, how it started, you know, Rare Pepe, CryptoPunks, why it is so specific at every step. And then, you know, what are the key platforms that came into the place, and what are the key artists, because, you know, art is quite important in this book. Who are the key artists, what we could call the blue chip artists now, something like this. And then at the end of the story, how can you become first a collector or an amateur, then a collector, and then potentially an investor. But it's like but first, you know, you need to like it, then to collect, and then maybe, you know, you will become an investor, but it's more complicated. So so this is, yeah, the book is, this is the idea. And then, you know, at the beginning, we had just the text. Then you say, yeah, you know, we're talking a lot about art. So we decided also to have, you know, to include all the artwork or many artworks we've been talking about, and also to include the QR code of all this artwork. So we had something like 300 QR code in the book. And so, you know, a lot of people really like it because they discover, they scan, they discover, they read more on the, you know, it's a mix, it's a hybrid book, basically, because, you know, you're talking about digital format. So you need to show the digital format on mobile phone or on laptop from people. So this is the, yeah, this is how it started. And what we did also, we commercialized it. I mean, it was pretty innovative when we did that, because it was in May, one year-ish ago, in May 2021, we commercialized it as an NFT. So, you know, 300 NFTs, you have to buy one. And if you have this NFT, you can then redeem the PDF and later redeem the printed version. And so then, you know, then even on the second hand market, you know, people trade, you know, I really like to experiment token. I think it's, this is the idea. For the non-fungible conference, we did this ticket also that was a non-fungible token, of course, but we did it the good way with artists. You know, we had the chance to add Xcopy and Neurocolor to collaborate to do the ticket. And even now, you know, the event happened like happened 3 months ago. You know, and it worked because we had like 1,200 people who minted. And so you use just the ticket. And even now, people are lifting the floor. I don't know why. But, you know, you still have some people. You know, the floor, yeah, is 0.5 or 0.6.
Does it give them any other utility after the conference? Like, does it help them for the next conference or anything like that?
You can guess.
Cool, 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 cool. I like it.
Yeah.
Speculating.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Well, Is the book in English? Your book available?
No, yeah, we're working on the, you know, actually, you know, I wanted to do it fast at the beginning, so I did it in French, but now we'll do a second version that will be in English first.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Well, John Coop, we've had NFTmorning.com, we've had the Non-Fungible Conference, we've got NFT Revolution. It sounds like you're doing a lot of interesting things. Where can people find out more? What's the main one that you want to send people to? Is it your Twitter? Is it your website? What's the...
I think my Twitter account is quite summarizing what I do. Twitter.com/JohnCoop, I think, is the simplest way to find me.
Excellent.
Amazing.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, John.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.